We have the tech to get food delivered in 15 minutes, but we all have horror stories about buying tickets. The Game Time app gives fans the advantage. Get amazing tickets in just a few taps. Fees are included, so what you see is what you pay. And the Game Time guarantee means authentic tickets at the best price every time. Take the guesswork out of buying tickets to concerts, sports, comedy, and more with Game Time. Download the Game Time app and create an account for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply.
It's the Back Nine Boys Golf Show. All about golf, from putting to driving, from hooks to whatever. Now, here's your host of the Back Nine Boys Golf Show, Rich Stiles.
Welcome to the weekend. Back Nine Boys is brought to you by Bridgestone Golf. Try the Tour B ball that fits your swing today. By PXG, you've never played like this before. By Stitch Golf, dress your game. By RSM, sponsor of the RSM Classic, giving back to our community. And by CPOMS. And CJ's Italian Restaurant, voted best pizza for 2 years in a row. Check out their full menu at cjsitalianrestaurant.com. On the show, we have two guests. First, Dr. Mo, talking about what do you need to do in the locker room before you play. And the locker room can be anywhere you are, where you can get your mind set on playing your game. Plus, what do we do when our round is not going as we expected? Then we'll talk to Bob Herrick, former Sports Illustrated writer, who was let go at the 1st of the June and now is writing again, and talks about his book, Tiger versus Phil, the accusations and life of Phil Mickelson, plus how he feels about the new PGA Tour schedule that's going to start in 2028 with the Championship Series and the Challenge Series. Thanks for listening, and here's my interview with Dr. Mo. Good morning. Welcome. I'm Rich Stiles. We're with Dr. Mo Pickens, sports psychologist at the Sea Island Golf Performance Center. Dr. Mo, always a pleasure to have you.
Yeah, great to be here, and good seeing you again.
All right, let's talk about some phrase that you use called locker room. Tell me what the locker room means to you that you tell your clients.
Well, the locker room is basically something I use in golf that literally means, like, if you were in another sport, football or basketball, you would be in the locker room and the coach would be putting up a couple keys, like on a, you know, whiteboard or somewhere. And it's basically, these are the things we want to focus on as a team. So let's take basketball. It might be, we got to get back on defense. This team tends to try and run a lot. We got to know where number five is, and we got to box out well, right? And so as those three things are going to be our keys, and that means that's what we're going to focus on. So during a timeout, the coach isn't just super happy because they're winning or super disappointed because they're losing. He's talking about those three things again and how they're doing relative to those. And so in golf, you know, one person's key or one of their keys might be to have great tempo. Like Zach Johnson thinks about that a lot. Just he needs to have great tempo from the time he wakes up, you know, goes to take a shower, eats breakfast, walks to the range. If he gets going fast, things don't go well, right? So for him, that's a big key. For another player, it could be something different where maybe they switch their mind a lot over the ball and they're bad with their putting, of like changing it from right edge to inside right. And he's got to be much more committed and not change his mind over the ball. So that's what I mean by keys are things that you know are kind of tendencies that can get you out of your element, and here's the things that I'm going to go focus on today to help me play better.
For example, get your hips through the shot, follow through.
That would be more of a what I would call an occupying thought. So that's something very specific to your long game, like okay. Get your hips through the shot.
Okay.
Great tempo would apply everywhere, walking into the ball, walking down the fairway, going from the green to the next tee. It doesn't mean that you wouldn't. Somebody might have the occupying thought of great tempo in their swing because okay. They get too fast, right? But an occupying thought is something very specific to a part of your game, chipping, putting, long game, whereas a key is more of an overall kind of descriptor for the entire day, right? So like in the locker room for basketball, when they're saying, hey, you know, we got to box out, that's something that's specific that they're doing, but that wouldn't be what a guy's thinking when he's at the free throw line. What a guy's thinking specifically at the free throw line would be more of an occupying thought.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay. Why do golfers, and I've seen some pros do it, but mostly amateurs, why do we beat ourselves up so much?
Well, because the pros make it look so easy on TV, and we think, okay, well, I can do that too. And we don't kind of, it doesn't factor in, wow, this is really a full-time job for them. And they spend an inordinate amount of time on this, more than I do. But because you can hit those shots occasionally, and you have made 20-foot putts, and you have hit great bunker shots, that you expect it to happen on a more consistent basis than it does, right? And so, you know, myself included, I mean, most golfers, their expectations are a little out of whack in terms of, okay, hey, let's be realistic. You know, I want to go out here. I think I can play well today. I know I'm going to make some mistakes. I know I'm going to do some good things too. But what happens typically is, especially if those mistakes come before the positive outcomes, then we kind of reinforce that by talking negative, or we get down. And then the next thing you know, we're almost expecting the next three putt to happen.
Right. Kind of talk yourself into it.
Yeah. And so you have to be, one of the things that I tell all my junior golfers, and they're terrible at this, is I'm like, hey, you cannot have a running dialogue while you're playing the hole. Okay, you hit it in the trees, and I can't believe I hit it in the trees. This is supposed to be a birdie hole. Now I got to punch out. I'm going to make bogey. Probably going to lose this hole. I mean, whatever we're saying to ourselves, right? You don't know what you're going to make until the end of the hole. So if you thought about it logically, like we do other parts of life, but in golf sometimes we just simply get illogical. But if you thought about it, you'd be like, okay, I'm going to be maybe mildly happy or mildly upset at the end of a hole. But while I'm playing the hole, I'm not going to have really any emotion, because most golfers have chipped in or made shots from the fairway, but they aren't thinking that way because they hit their drive in the trees. And so they already start talking with this running dialogue about a negative outcome that hasn't yet occurred.
So if we hit it in the trees, we're out, we're hitting three. Mm-hmm. You could say, well, all right, I'm going to salvage a bogey out of this and move on and forget about this.
You could say that, but you could say, hey, this may go in. Like, I can hit it 140 yards. There's a chance. It's a small chance. There's a chance that, or I could definitely hit it on the green and make a 10-foot putt or make a 20-foot putt and say par. But, yeah, but not talking yourselves into the kind of statistical probabilities that, yes, might go along with that, making a bogey or whatever. But being open to, you know, what I try to get people to do is wait on positive things. So if you're waiting on making a long putt, then you're not as upset when you have a 9-iron and you hit it 40 feet instead of hitting it 10 feet like you wanted, right? And that's where we get upset. And that's not even realistic. Pros don't hit their 9-iron 10 feet from the hole. The ones that are playing great on Sunday and the shots they show on TV. But what you have to realize is they're taking 156 players that are hitting their 9-iron at the green, and they're showing us the 10 best. So we think that's the norm.
Right.
And that's not the norm. Yeah, if you go look at pro stats, that'd be a great thing for amateurs to do. Go look at yardage bands, 50 to 75, 75 to 100, 100 to 125, and see where the pros actually hit it. And you'll be like, oh, okay, 25 feet isn't that bad. They only hit it 17 feet. Yeah.
All right. You always talk about the four R's: refocus, routine, react, and relax. Why is it so important for us to do those four R's while we're playing?
Well, because our mind naturally wants to go to the results, which that would be the big R. But you're trying to have a process to actually accomplish that result, right? And that's, I mean, it doesn't, you don't have to do that process. That's a way that I outline kind of playing one shot at a time, or staying in the moment, or staying in the present. Those things we hear is we got to put some verbiage to it to actually do it. And so that's just the way I describe it. You know, refocus is your decision. Then you would get into your routine, which is how you walk in, get set up if you're going to take practice swings. React is when you hit the shot. And then relax is your time in between shots. And the biggest mistake amateurs make is they simply don't relax enough on the golf course. Right. And they're having all this running commentary going on and they're thinking too much golf and they get too much thinking about their golf swing. And most amateur golfers would do a lot better if they would commit to, I'm going to spend the 90% of my day relaxing. And then when I get around the ball, I'm going to spend 30 to 45 seconds focusing on this shot and then it's done. And then on to the next. Right. But we tend to like get into this steady state of golf thinking for 4 to 4.5 hours, way too much technique, way too much emotion. And over time, it's just unsustainable. And so we play, you know, poor or at least not as well as we want to.
And there are times when you play a round of golf, you score well, you did a lot of things well, and you go, oh, man, I think I figured something out. And then the next time you go out, it's totally opposite that. And that gets into our head too. Like, what the heck? I did it yesterday. Why can't I do it today?
Well, and I think a lot of the reason why we think that way and we get confused almost is because, you know, 95% of other sports, they're in the same location. They're in the same playing field all the time. Like the tennis court doesn't change. Right. The size of the basketball court doesn't change. Right. If you're swimming 100 meters, that doesn't change how you do that. Right. But golf is never the same. The pin positions aren't the same. The weather can change. Yes. You know, today can be very similar to yesterday, but at least the pins are going to change. And then we as humans, we're not in direct control of this thing in front of us. Right. So like we're holding a golf club and we have to manipulate the golf club to then move the ball the way that we want to. And that's not an easy task. It's much easier in terms of direct control if I'm throwing a football versus hitting a golf ball. I don't have this thing in the way. Right. And so I think that's where we just get confused and we think, OK, well, if I did it today, I should be able to do it tomorrow. That'd be like, well, my three-year-old was great for this hour. I think he'll be great. I think he'll be great for the rest of the day. That's not going to happen.
Right, right.
And we're like a lot of three-year-olds out on the golf course.
We certainly are. Why is our practice swing almost perfect in the eyes of ourselves? And then we get up with that ball, that little white thing that we have to move, mm-hmm. and it's not so good.
Well, that goes into a little bit of the relax, you know, but in a different way. It, usually when you're taking a practice swing and you're not attempting to hit the ball, there's really no tension involved. And so you have better tempo. You're not as technical, right? You're not as...
There's no outcome.
There's no outcome. And so the lack of that outcome doesn't make us tense. Right. And so but then when we have the outcome of this ball, we get tension, whether that's for some people shortening their backswing, for other people kind of, you know, yanking the club down from the top. We do a lot of things in these golf terms that we hear. But basically, it's like, OK, if I were to just swing without regard to the outcome, like I'm just going to swing and wherever the ball goes, it goes.
Right.
I mean, if you can get to that place, that's what you're trying to do is like, okay, I made a practice swing. Just simply repeat the swing and let's see where the ball goes.
And obviously you want our self-talk to be more positive, not as negative, but you also have talked about, and I love that about you and the way that you do it is give yourself grace.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think in life, you know, we're going to make mistakes and that's, you know, more and more true on the golf course where we're trying to perform a very difficult sport. But yeah, you got to have grace. You got to have acceptance is probably the word I use a lot with my players as well. It's just, you know, things are going to happen. You're putting on an imperfect surface. You're playing with the wind that we can't see. You're changing every day. You know, you wake up and, you know, we know our body changes daily, or, you know, even at a molecular level. So like you have to have this understanding of like, okay, what I did yesterday doesn't have that much bearing on today. You know, and even the people who practice way more than us amateurs, the pros, I mean, you see them shoot 74, 67, and you see them shoot 66, 73. So if they can change 6, 7, 8 strokes a day, it's not that illogical to think as an amateur, wow, I might be 10 strokes different than I was yesterday, even without that doing that much different, right? Because your ball striking may be similar, but scoring and ball striking are different. And that's a whole nother topic. But like some days you get really good numbers and it's easy to hit all your irons like full like you want. And then the next day you get a lot of in-between numbers. And then some days the putts all look good to your eye. And other days they look like they're never going to go in. So,
which is a point. So you're getting ready to play. You're on the way to the golf course. You start thinking, all right, I played this a couple days ago. I shot really well. I birdied this first hole. You know, I know what I need to do. And then you end up double bogeying that first hole just because you hit a couple of bad shots. You just have to move on and forget about that.
Yeah. I mean, you just have to be like, yeah. I mean, you're going to make mistakes. And sometimes they come early. Sometimes they come in the middle. Sometimes they come late. But you need to go out with the mindset, I believe, of like, I'm going to do some good things. I'm probably going to do some things that, you know, I don't like a whole lot. But I'm going to plan my day. I'm going to relax a lot and I'm going to wait on good things to happen. I'm going to wait on making a long putt. I'm going to wait on chipping in. I'm going to wait on hitting it really close from the fairway. And the more I have these kind of positive outlook, but then grace or acceptance when the negative things do occur, it's easier to maintain this kind of relaxed state and focus around the ball versus getting into all this golf thinking for 4 hours, which we know is just not going to be that productive.
Yeah. Dr. Mo, always a pleasure. Thanks.
Oh, yeah. Great being with you. Thank you.
Hi, this is Zach Johnson, and you're listening to the Back Nine Boys.
Welcome back to the show. I'm Rich Stiles, and we're with Bob Herrick, golf journalist, was with Sports Illustrated, which, Bob, I want you to handle that, but now with Daily Drive. So, Bob, tell us about the latest.
Yeah, Rich. Well, you know, unfortunately, this is the way of the world these days. Media business is tough, And you know, right after the PGA Championship, after four of us had covered it and after seven of us had gone to the Masters and no indication that there was anything wrong, the company I worked for, Minute Media, had kind of a rough business deal go bad. And as how these things work, they took it out on us. Yeah. And at SI, they decided to lay off, you know, 12, 15 people, including getting rid of the golf vertical, which is really disappointing and surprising. I mean, we had worked really hard the last 4 or 5 years to be prominent in that space. You know, I think that we had done a good job of covering the game and, you know, getting our share of stories and being out there. I covered a lot of tournaments and all of a sudden they just pulled the plug. You know, so fortunately for me, I have some colleagues that had sort of started this Substack newsletter called The Daily Drive that they were just sort of fooling around with. And they asked me to jump on board. And I have. I mean, it's sort of become my writing outlet now. I was at the U.S. Open. I'm going to the British Open. You know, it's a daily email that comes straight to you. And obviously we need people to subscribe. There's free subscribers, but we also need the paid ones. It's just the way of the world, you know, but the way my partners are selling it is it's basically about $1 a week. You know, if you look at it that way, it's sort of like the old days when you could buy a newspaper for a quarter. I don't know if anybody's out there can remember those days, but I remember them. I actually can remember going up to a newspaper bin and putting a quarter in.
Yeah.
You know, like you don't even see that anymore, right? There's barely newspaper racks anywhere today. So anyway, you know, if you look at it that way, it's a pretty good deal, I think. And we have a lot of independence, and that helps us too.
Well, let's look to the future with Daily Drive, and let's look to what's going on the PGA Tour or something not going on the PGA Tour. Bob, I want to get your opinion about LIV. Is LIV gone, dead, out of the picture?
I am of the opinion that it's not. I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if it was, but I just do think that there are enough people out there with money who are willing to maybe be okay with the idea of investing in golf. And now that the, you know, look, let's be honest, there was a lot of people who did not want to get involved because of the stigma of being associated with Saudi Arabia.
Right.
You know, I mean, that's just fact. There was, even though there are dozens upon hundreds of companies that do business in Saudi and or whom the PIF, the Public Investment Fund, invests in here in the U.S., you know, there was a negativity to that. And obviously there was some negativity to going up against the PGA Tour. But I think a lessened product that is where you know that they are not really competing with the PGA Tour might be of interest to some people, especially internationally, especially if they embrace the team idea that LIV has. So I'm not ready to, you know, declare them done, but I also would say it's going to be a huge challenge.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because to go from unlimited funds basically to now having to really watch what you spend and just not having the income levels that you need, mainly through TV rights.
Right.
You know, that's a huge hill to climb for them. And, you know, I'm going to be very intrigued to see how it plays out because you know, I've been to a lot of their events and they're well done. They're very, you know, they're very, very nice events. If you just take all the politics, all the drama aside, if you went there for the entertainment purpose, it's a good time, just like PGA Tour event is.
Right.
But boy, they spent a lot of money on it and they need to drastically cut that back. And then, you know, they probably need to drastically cut back their purses. And then what kind of product do you have?
Yeah, very good points. But go from unlimited funds to not sure if you're going to have any. That definitely puts a big question mark out there.
No question. I mean, and, you know, they have a lot of things that go against them compared to what the PGA Tour has. I've written about this a lot. I've discussed it, but you know, they have to cover their own production costs for TV.
Right.
The PGA Tour does not pay for production costs. Like the networks do, or through some combination of ad buys or the title sponsor. Like the PGA Tour is not paying every week for their events to be broadcast. They actually get a big fee to have them broadcast. LIV was getting a nominal fee and then paying the cost of their broadcast every week, which is very, very expensive to do. Right. Shotgun starts. You have to have a camera on every hole, at least one. And, you know, they have expensive talent. And so, you know, there's going to have to be some cutbacks that might impact the product. You know, they did set a high bar. People who liked LIV and who followed the Shotgun, who liked the TV product, you know, they were really good with it. Well, it's almost bound to be not as good. And can their fans who follow it, you know, live with that? I think they're almost going to have to.
Yeah. Well, we'll see what happens with that. To me, it's a big question mark, but also a big question mark. Big news, a lot of allegations going on the last couple of weeks about Phil Mickelson. What have you learned and what have you found out? And what is your opinion of what's going on with Phil as he continues in a downward PR world at this point?
Yeah, I mean, this is tough. I'll be honest with you. I've not really done my own reporting on this. I've just followed along with what everybody else is doing. I mean, earlier this year, when, you know, Phil was not playing, I did have some, you know, sort of a few exchange of messages with him. It was more along the lines of, you know, I hope everything's okay, because there was a family matter. And he was very vague, obviously. I had asked him at one point if he had planned to play in the British Open. This was a while ago, several weeks ago, before all this broke. And he was like, I'm, you know, I haven't decided yet. I've liked to try. If I do, I probably will play out the rest of the LIV schedule. But if I don't, I'm probably done. And then he reiterated that, you know, he's dealing with a you know, a family matter. And nobody okay. really knows what that is. I don't discount it. I think it's separate from this other stuff that has been written about recently, the Golf Digest story, you know, about the inappropriate contact, and then the scratch story by Alan Shipnuck, you know, who Alan wrote a biography of Phil that came out a year or two ago, very detailed, and has covered his career, you know, since the beginning. I mean, I tell people who want to, you know, throw dirt on what Alan is doing, like, look, well, it's very hard to write a story like that and get it published without it being vetted to the nth degree. And you right. know that there were lawyers involved, and you are not going with that if you don't feel fairly confident about what you have. And so that doesn't make it all true, but I also would tell people that being on this side of the business, you do not just throw that kind of stuff around haphazardly.
Yeah.
He said he had 19. Yeah.
Yeah.
Why would you do that? I mean, it, right. you know, he said he had 19 sources. He did have an on the record source, you know, one of the alleged women that, you know, was involved, you know, Pat Perez's ex-wife. You know, I mean, there was different voices in there. He's not making it up. You know, are the sources right. making it up? You know, that's where the you know, where you might wonder. But no matter where you stand on this, I find it to be really, really sad. You know, I've always thought a lot of Phil as a great, he's a great golfer, probably top 10 all time. Throughout his career, as I've covered golf, he's always been really good to me. You know, we've had our moments here and there, but, you know, that happens. Look, I thought his PGA Championship victory at age 50 was remarkable. And he won a major after Tiger did. And he was going to be like an all-time kind of golf statesman and hero. And look at where we are now.
Yeah.
You know, so it's – all of that part of it to me is just sad. You know, it's really, really unfortunate. And I hope this gets resolved in an amicable manner, if that's possible.
Yeah, for all of the great things that he did in golf and all the accomplishments that he's had, it's a shame from his standpoint that all of the stuff outside of golf, the gambling, these allegations and stuff is taking over the story that will be remembered about Phil Mickelson.
What is Toyota affordability? It's buying smart. Right now, your local Toyota dealer has great deals available on the fuel-efficient Camry, Corolla, or Corolla Cross. Toyota, let's go places.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's you almost have to separate the player from this. And I mean, look, that's happened a lot with Tiger. Let's
yeah.
be honest. I mean, and I've seen stuff here recently where people have said, "Oh, nobody piled on Tiger like Phil's getting piled on," and I'm sort of like, "Man, you guys are either you're very, very young or you have a bad memory, because nobody was piled on like Tiger was."
Yeah.
In the aftermath of the 2009, 2010 revelations, and nobody's covered up, you know, his various misdeeds. You know, he's had these issues with the DUIs. He's had the back problems, obviously the car crash in 2021, where we never really got a full accounting of what happened. So, you know, Tiger has not slid by in any of this either. And, but, you know, he kind of was able to rehab his reputation a lot of the times along the way.
Right.
And now that's going to be the trick for Phil.
Yeah, we are a very forgiving society. We tend to, you know, comment a lot. Social media has made that very, very easy, especially trashing a lot of things. But I just think both of them have just really put some clouds over their lives and what they're going to leave behind.
Yeah, it's a shame. I mean, you know, it really is. I mean, especially this latest thing with Tiger, where, you know, in March, where, you know, he rolled a car and thankfully nobody got hurt, but it could have been bad. And it was in the middle yeah. of the day. And, you know, obviously he was charged with, he was accused of DUI. That has not been resolved. But that was because he refused to take a test.
Right.
So they automatically charge you with that, you know, and that I believe that is still to be determined. But still, I mean, we all saw the video. We saw, you know, the police video, what was acknowledged. And, you know, I think we thought he was very close to coming back to golf this year. And now that's all been put on hold again.
Yeah. So we're going to have to wait to see what happens there. I did talk to Tim O'Neill a while back, and he thought that what he heard is that Tiger was considering Champions Tour, but that is probably now still. That was prior to the latest accident. That's probably still up in the air at this point.
Yeah, I mean, I hope Tiger does that. There's a lot of Champions Tour events left this year.
Yeah,
you know, if he's gotten home, if he's feeling good and he's hitting balls, can you imagine what a boost that would be and what attention that would get? And we don't really know, but if Tiger really does want to play next year, wants to play some of the majors, you've got to compete. You have to compete somewhere.
Yeah,
you got to get in the arena. You got to get inside the ropes. The Champions Tour is not the same as playing in the Masters. But you're still nervous. You're on TV. You're playing for prize money. You're playing against very good players. But the difference is you don't have to put the stress on your legs. You don't have to, you know, maybe you get to ride a golf cart. You get to work on the nuance of the game in competition without wearing down your body.
Very good point.
I hope he embraces that. You know, he doesn't have to play 10 times, but how cool would it be if he played two or three this fall?
Yeah.
And then maybe another one in January and ramped up a little bit. This might be wishful thinking, but, you know, the golf fan and me would really love to see that happen.
Well, I think you and millions of others. Bob, there's still some things I want to talk with you about. So would you hang with us and let's take a commercial break, and then we'll be right back more with Bob Herrick.
Hi, I'm Steve Eubanks, the author of Godball. You are listening to the Back Nine Boys.
Welcome back. We're with Bob Herrick again. We're talking about Tiger, we're talking about Phil, we're talking about Liv. But Bob, there's some other things that I want to ask you. What are your feelings about the new announcement by the PGA Tour of the schedule for 2028 with this championship series and the challenger series? What are your thoughts on that, as long as you've covered golf?
Yeah, listen, it's a big change, I think. It's going to take some getting used to. I think some of the wording is a little bit, or, you know, the calling it the championship series and the challenger series might be a little wonky. Might take a little, you know, I actually would have been fine with tier one and tier two. I think it would have been easier, you know, just call them tier one and tier two, PGA Tour tier one, PGA Tour tier two. Now it's PGA Tour championship series. It's a little, you know, somebody made a joke to me, if you're familiar, like back when in Big Ten football, when they split into divisions and they call it the Legends and Leaders, and they got hammered for that. And they eventually got away from it. This is fine. Look, I think we understand that championship is above challenger. And so, you know, that's all good. But, you know, what we're going to see in 2 years is a streamlined top level of the PGA Tour. There's going to be 23 or 24 events that we know that only these top players will play in. Like right now, in theory, Scottie Scheffler could be playing at the John Deere Classic. He could be. He's not. So could Xander Schauffele.
Right.
Jordan Spieth is. Right. So is Keegan Bradley. But if they're in this top tier in 2028, they won't be able to play in that event or a challenger series event. They will only be able to play in the championship series event, which there's going to be 15 or 16 of. Then you add in the majors, the players, and the playoff events, and you get to 23 or 24. The idea is that the top level of the PGA Tour, we're going to see all these guys together more often. If a guy plays 20 times, he's only going to miss four of the events. And chances are those four that people miss will be spread out. And so you're going to have these guys playing together most of the time. The lower level will be a way to play your way up to the top level, but only if you win two times in season or finish in the top 20, which means you can move up the next year. So there's going to be two distinct tours and paths. And, you know, I think it remains to be seen, like, how this goes over. Because those lower tour events are going to be lower in stature than the ones now. Smaller right. purses and fields that won't have a lot of named guys. And that's going to take some getting used to.
Well, Bob, as you say, challengers can move up to championship. So does that mean that championship players, if this goes through the way it's being presented, can move down to the challenger series because they're not playing well?
Correct. There's going to be relegation. It sounds to me like the way they're going to do it is anybody outside of the top 90. So, you know, that's, you know, right now you have to be in the top 100 to keep your card.
Right.
Now it'll be top 90 out of about 130 guys. So, you know, and if you're not and you don't have any other kind of pathway exemption, which we haven't been told how they're going to address that. Like, for example, again, I wrote about this just recently. Scottie Scheffler, what if next year he finishes 95th? Now, that's incredibly unlikely, right?
Right.
But, you know, maybe he gets hurt or misses a bunch of time. You know, they might have a medical waiver. But let's say that just for argument's sake, he finishes outside of the top 90. Well, you know, Scottie just won two majors last year. You know, he's got his PGA Tour exemption right now runs through like 2031. Now, that would still apply to the lower level, but are they going to kick him out of the top level for one bad year? Like, those are things that are going to be very interesting to see how they figure that out, because that's dicey, you know, yeah. Because if you want it to be as competitive as they say, there needs to be some retribution if you fall down.
Right.
You know,
right.
So but yet, are you going to knock out a guy like that who's had this incredible run here the last several years? And, I mean, I got to believe there's going to be some sort of a backstop for multiple major winners, multiple tournament winners, maybe even, you know, high money earners. But after that, you know, a regular guy, a guy like Patrick Cantlay, who hasn't won recently, would be vulnerable to falling down into the lower tier.
Right. Yeah, and the money, I mean, it's $20 million minimum on the championship series and $4 million minimum on the challenger series. Now, I was told that it can go higher on the challenger series depending upon the sponsor. So speaking of sponsors, I mean, that's going to be a challenge for the PGA Tour. Championship series, I don't think there'll be a lot of issues unless they price it out of the market. But I think it may be a challenge for sponsorships on the Challenger Tour, because already it's being deemed as lesser than the other tour.
There's going to be five or six or seven of those Challenger events that will be standalone events, because there will be some weeks where the championship series does not play.
Right.
And so those events have a chance to at least be on their own, you know, and have their own window. And they, yeah, they're not going to have the top players, but I would think those purses will be a little higher. They'll get more prominence, say, on Golf Channel or whomever. But you're right. You know, the rest of the tournaments are. No, next week there's an opposite event of the Scottish Open on the PGA Tour, and it's got a $4 million purse. It'll be on Golf Channel probably, like on tape delay or late in the day, like. That's what those Challenger series events are going to be like.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's a big challenge to go out and find sponsors. There's just a lot of questions. I'm sure they're going to be ironed out over the next year and a half. But let's talk about another issue that's out there. What is going on with Rory? He's not playing in signature events. I mean, is there some issues that you know of behind the scenes that may be going on with him?
No, I don't think so. I just think this is Rory is at a place in his life, 37 years old, six majors, you know, doesn't need to grind. And He, you know, likes to play the DP World Tour. He supports them. And he's just not going to play more than 22 or 22 times a year. So, you know, you throw in the majors and the players and, you know, he's going to, from my reporting, he's not going to make it to 15 events on the PGA Tour this year, which puts him in violation of the membership rules for a international member who plays a home tour. But I think the tour is going to waive it. You know, like they're going to work with them. They don't like the idea of it being called giving him a pass, but I think that's what it's going to be. You know, they're just going to, like, the alternative is you penalize themselves by not letting him be a member next year, which means he can only accept 7 sponsor invites and only can play 12 times on the PGA Tour. That includes the majors, you know, so 7 sponsor invites, the majors and the players. Well, you know, you're just, because he's going to miss by 1 this year, you'd actually, and he wouldn't be eligible for the playoffs. So that means, you know, you're looking at 3 to 5 events less that he'd play in exchange for the fact that he's going to miss by 1.
Right.
I think it's a pretty easy call for the PGA Tour leadership. It won't go over well with everyone because the rules are obviously being made to be different for him, but that's life, right? And Rory's very popular, and I think the tour would be foolish to fight him on this one. And maybe they work with him to get something else out of him because he knows that it's important for him to be around. He skipped 3 signature events this year. He's not going to play 15. You know, to my knowledge, there are no extenuating circumstances. He could have played this last week at the Travelers. He didn't. You know, that would have been an easy way to take care of it. So, but again, he's Rory McIlroy, and he's done a lot for the PGA Tour.
Yeah. Well, he was a spokesperson for a while. I mean, about the LIV situation for so long. They leaned on him a lot during that.
Yeah, exactly.
What are your thoughts about the Tour Championship moving out of Eastlake after being there for so many years and now going to different venues for the final Tour Championship that's going to be played in August?
Yeah, it's a tough one. I mean, I think it's been a successful event in Atlanta. The Eastlake community, you know, the revitalization of that neighborhood.
Yeah,
it's a good venue for a small field. But the other side of it is it's so hot in August. They've had a hard time getting much buzz. And if they're going to go to some really cool venues and end with match play, I think they're giving themselves a boost, which I think it needs. I think their playoff structure needs a bit of a jolt. And we don't know exactly what they're talking about, but I think that makes a lot of sense. It always made sense to move the Tour Championship around. They didn't because they had a title sponsor that was based in Atlanta, 2 of them, Southern Company and Coca-Cola. I mean, you know, if you're the PGA Tour, it's hard to turn your back on that.
Right.
And those are great partners for them. So this is not a knock, but I also think it makes sense to change it up. And when they do, I think it's going to get them a lot of attention. It's going to be well received.
Yeah. Well, it'll be interesting to see, you know, all the places that they could go and will eventually go. You cover the U.S. Open. How impressed were you with Wyndham Clark's performance?
I thought it was awesome. I mean, it's hard to lead all 4 days, you know, and he shot that first round 64. He has a unique little stat attached to him. He's the only player in U.S. Open history, I believe, who shot successively higher scores and won twice. Hmm. He did that at L.A. Country Club, too. Tiger did that in 2002 at Bethpage. His scores got higher every day, and he still won, which is amazing when you think about it. But obviously, I think, you know, you're aware, we all know that on the last day, Clark went through a lot. he took a lot of abuse from those fans, and he overcame it. I thought it was a really impressive performance. He didn't have all aspects of his game on Sunday and gutted it out, you know. And look at the run he's been on. He won in Dallas. He was third at the Memorial. He was just fifth at the Travelers. He's had a heck of a month. And, I'm very curious to see how he does at the Open. I think, if you can keep that streak going, that could be interesting.
Yeah, it sure could. He's probably up for looking at Player of the Year. I mean, Scotty's going to be up there. Everybody talks about Scotty's had a bad year, but, you know, look at where he's been. He's been top 20 probably in every tournament that he's been in.
Exactly. I mean, if he actually only has two outside of the top 20, but none outside of the top 25.
Yeah.
And he has like four runner-up finishes, four or five. He's got like eight finishes in the top four. I mean, if you take the name away from the record, you'd say that's an incredible year. Like that, a win and all those close calls, like guys would die for that.
Yeah.
But it's Scottie Scheffler who won six times last year, seven the year before, and has four majors, you know. So again, it's like expectations are different for different people. What's great for one guy is a disappointment for another. And again, it's hard to say disappointment. I mean, look, he's just not crossed the line as often this year. And I think it just shows how hard that is to do. And we sometimes take it for granted.
Right. And how good everybody else is getting because they're working harder to kind of get up to his standards, kind of like when Tiger was around. All right, I got one more question, and you got to answer either Tiger or Jack. Great debate in your book. Your choice, Tiger or Jack, as the world's best.
Well, first of all, Rich, that's unfair because I think it's a lot of nuance. I could argue for either one.
Yeah, we could.
I've said this. I could argue for either one. In the book, what I did was I went with Tiger without any, you know, disrespect to Jack. I pointed out all the reasons you can make a Jack. But in the end, what I leaned on was a couple of things that I just sort of feel like 15 equals 18 in Tiger's era. And 82 wins is incredible.
Yeah.
When you consider that there's seven players in history who have gotten to 50 wins on the PGA Tour. The first six all occurred by 1973. Jack and Billy Casper got to 50 wins in 1973. Jack obviously went on to win, 23 more times. Nobody else until Tiger got to 50 wins. He did it in 2006.
Bob, we've only got about 30 seconds more.
So anyway, that's why I lean towards Tiger. Because of strength of field.
Well, Bob, it's always a pleasure to have you on. Thanks for doing two segments with us today. And we'll definitely do it again. And good luck with your new venture.
Appreciate it. Thanks so much.
You've been listening to the Back Nine Boys Golf Show with Rich Stiles. Go to back9boys.com for all things golf whenever you want it. We'll be back next week with an all-new Back Nine Boys at back9boys.com.
We have the tech to get food delivered in 15 minutes, but we all have horror stories about buying tickets. The Game Time app gives fans the advantage. Get amazing tickets in just a few taps. Fees are included, so what you see is what you pay. And the Game Time guarantee means authentic tickets at the best price every time. Take the guesswork out of buying tickets to concerts, sports, comedy, and more with Game Time. Download the Game Time app and create an account for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply.
Hi, everybody. It's James and Andy here from your next favorite podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Yes, we are two-fourths of a group of people who love facts, and we love to find new facts, and we come here every week and tell each other about them. For instance, Andy, did you know that one of the world's oldest cycling road races is getting much harder because people keep stealing the road?
I want to know more already, but I'm instead going to tell you my new fact, which is that some ancient coffins from the 17th century have faces.
The coffins have faces.
It's really creepy.
Not just on the inside.
No.
Wow. If you like the sound of those facts, or indeed facts in general, then come and find us. No Such Thing as a Fish, wherever you get your podcasts.